Hey, Anna, let's say you're outside in the country, way, way, way far away from the city lights. What's the farthest thing you can see with the naked eye?
Sometimes I can see the Orion constellation at my parents' house, which is in the middle of nowhere.
That's out
I look
there.
At that, I can see that.
That's pretty
And
far.
I have terrible vision.
Oh, well, so there, the farthest thing technically you can see without a telescope is called the Andromeda Galaxy. So this is beyond the stars in Orion, although some of the stars in Orion are pretty far. But if you're in a dark sky, you can just barely see this little smudge of light. This is another galaxy, kind of like our Milky Way galaxy, with about 1 trillion stars in it. And it is so far away, you can just barely see it.
Oh, it sounds nice.
It does. It's a nice little galaxy.
Pretty.
It does. And that's one of the things, getting out in the country, be able to see this stuff. And the distance to this galaxy is 2.5 million light years. Light year is the distance light travels in a year, or 6 trillion miles. So 2.5 million times 6 trillion.
I was told there'd be no math.
That's a lot of miles.
Word.
I didn't,
a lot of miles.
I wasn't going to do it either. I was just saying those two numbers together.
Oh, you
together.
Were just saying, okay. I thought you were asking me. I was like,
No, I thought that sounded impressive. Whatever, whatever 6 trillion times 2.5 million is, that's a lot. From our makeshift home studios and Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. We're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Today, we're excited to welcome the CEO of COSI. That's the Center of Science and Industry, for all you listeners that didn't take your school field trips in Ohio, Dr. Frederick Bertley. So first of all, real quick, I think that the Andromeda Galaxy, the pictures I've seen, are really pretty for a galaxy named for somebody who was eaten by a sea monster.
Yeah,
almost eaten by a sea monster.
Almost eaten by a sea monster.
She survived.
She did escape the sea monster, thanks to Perseus. But
just wanted to say that.
But yeah, that galaxy is really cool, and the pictures of it look pretty awesome. It's one of those things that if you get out in the country, it is the faintest little smudge, and you're like, wow, that is far away.
Oh, I love that. I do. I think I told you this when I went to Cumberland. It is shocking to me still how many more stars you can see. I thought, oh, it can't be that much better. Like, I don't know, when I'm in the city or versus, oh my gosh, it is. I feel dumb because I know how gorgeous it was. Like, I'm like, this is just like so many stars and so pretty.
I know. It's something we miss out by living in the cities. I mean, it's you know, the light pollution around, and that's all. When I try to do vacations, I try to go to dark skies and see what I can. And I also like to go to science centers, too.
Oh, that's so funny that you mentioned that, Dean, because you know we're talking about the greatest science center that I ever visited as a preteen, COSI.
That's what I was thinking we were going to talk about. That was great.
Yeah. I know. I just got derailed a little by the way.
So you went to COSI up in Columbus?
Of course I did. Throw everything in the Subaru. Go up. My mom was very into educational vacations, which is how I ended up at the 5 Civilized Tribes Museum in rural Oklahoma. But we'll talk about that another time. So we would go to COSI, not only on field trips, but like as part of like a little... like fun little summer thing, we would go to COSI. It was great. You lived in Columbus, didn't you go to COSI?
I went there so many times. I mean, yeah, I've grown up in Columbus. It was the best field trip ever. We even did overnights there. So we could, you could like be with your, I think it was fifth grade, fourth grade, something like that. And you can like play around in the museum at night and then sleep. Where did we sleep? Doesn't seem like we slept in the time tunnel,
No, they just probably threw a sleeping bag down on like a cold marble floor, and they're like, "You'll be fine."
Probably back then, yeah.
You don't have back problems or anything.
I don't think they even gave us like juice boxes or anything. Anyway, it's just, but it was the funnest thing. I mean, I went there so many times, and the original location was right downtown, and then now they're in a newer location, which is even bigger and more expansive. It's a really cool thing. So I didn't know people in Cincinnati went all the way up to Columbus to see that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was like, and I mean, I did like educational vacations, whatever they, you know, fun, but that place was like, it was really something that I like genuinely look forward to. I'm not very good at science, but I did look forward to going there because there were so many cool things to do and it was really fun and we could just like kind of run around and it was great. So yeah, absolutely. We would go up there and maybe I saw you there.
You never know. It's possible.
You're walking around with a Huggy, one of those drinks, like you own the place because you're staying the night. And I was in awe as like, when you said juice box, when you think of those Huggies, you know?
Those things. Yeah, yeah.
Those were so awful for you and the environment.
Oh, yeah. The kids that were staying the night, yeah, we did think we were superior to the kids that were not staying the night. There's no doubt about that. That we were going to, I even think they had a dance. Like I don't know. It's a little hazy memory because it was so long ago. Back to
a dance.
I feel like there was music involved and stuff like that. But scavenger hunts.
If there wasn't, let's just say there was.
Yeah, well, just whatever happened in fifth grade. I don't know. It's all
whatever
blur.
happened.
Blur. But definitely greatest field trip experiences of my young life were there. That's for sure. And if only I paid more attention, maybe I would have been an astronomer earlier in my life too. I probably was too busy dancing or something. That's, I don't know.
Too busy like spotting the best place for your sleeping bag.
That's probably what it was.
Overnight. I feel like it all worked out though. I mean,
it did.
You got there eventually.
That's right. That's right. So back to our topic on distant things that are far away. One of the questions that I get asked a lot is, I was just saying, like, if you're out in the country, you can see the Milky Way in the sky. You can see the Andromeda galaxy up in the sky. Mm-hmm. But people are they kind of wonder, like, well, so wait, what is the Milky Way? Is the Milky Way that like cloudy thing that streaks across the sky from one side to the other, you can barely see out in the country? Or is it our galaxy that we live in? And what's the answer?
Why would you ask me? You're just doing this so you can come in like the hero and be like, I know what it is. I'm mean. I push my glasses up. I'm sorry. I lashed out.
It's true. I was just about to do that.
I don't know what it is.
There you go. I'm pushing the glasses up. I'm pushing the glasses. Don't make me push the glasses up.
Actually, it is.
Actually, it's both things. That's what I was hoping you were going to say, because you know that. I mean, the Milky Way is the galaxy we live in, but it's also that thing that we see across the sky.
That is confusing, though, as a concept. Like, are we in it or are we looking at it? It's a little weird.
We're both. That's the thing. We're embedded in it. Our sun is just one of those billions and billions of stars that are in our galaxy. And so we're in the middle of this on one of the spiral arms. And from our perspective, those stars they show up as this kind of little streak across the sky that goes from one side of the sky to the other. So, but the other question people ask a lot is, well, if you see a picture of the Milky Way, how did we get the picture of the Milky Way if we're on the inside? I mean, that's, you can't do that, right? So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what makes it so confusing. It's like, oh, well, you see a picture of this spiral swirly thing of stars, and like, that's our galaxy. It's like, well, yeah, but we're inside of it, right? And so, yeah, those pictures of our Milky Way are all artistic renderings. We can't fly something out far enough from the galaxy to turn around and take a selfie of us.
What?
So the only way we think we know the shape of our galaxy is from the inside. So we can look out in all different directions, measure the distance to all those stars, and get a rough estimate of what our galaxy looks like. But we don't know what it really looks like from the outside.
I'm starting to feel like a speck of dust on a speck of sand on a giant beach on a small island on a, I can't, okay.
That's exactly it. That's the best analogy. I mean, basically, your street address, your city, your county, your state, your country, your planet. Then we're in the solar system. The solar system's in the Milky Way, and the Milky Way is in the universe. So yes, that was my intent to make you feel tiny. Did it work?
I don't feel like tiny. I feel like I would be looking at tiny thinking, wow, that's huge.
Oh,
like
that's
I'm like
better.
Tinier than tiny.
Oh, you're tinier than tiny. And you're like, that's itty, huge. Itty. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely messes with you. The scale of the universe is kind of scary, but it's But yeah, that's what I always think of, like, oh, these pictures of the pictures and quote unquote pictures of the galaxy are all kind of artistic drawings of what we think it would look like if you're stepping out and looking back. So that's, we could see the Andromeda galaxy clearly because it's so far out and we can see the whole thing. But do we look like Andromeda or do we look like something else?
Andromeda is really pretty.
It is.
When I've seen it, because it's got like the blues around, like it's got like yellow. I mean, it's really very multi colorful, lovely.
I know. So which one's
better? I hope we're as pretty.
Exactly. That's what the people in Andromeda, at the Andromeda galaxy, when they look back at us, what do they see? I hope they're thinking the same thing. Like, oh, yeah, that's a cute, oh, I like that galaxy. That's so cute.
I hope we're pink.
Oh, that would be a different view. Yeah. So then they say, oh, look at that.
That's
and
right.
That would be interesting because, yeah, the star colors would tell us a lot, and it would tell if there's lots of stars being formed, if we have a lot of star forming regions. But yeah, the spiral arms are pretty likely. But when we look out at these different galaxy shapes, there's like really weird shaped ones. There's spherical ones. There's spiral ones. But we're pretty sure we're a spiral. But maybe one day we'll fly out there and take a selfie and see what we look like. Then show it to Andromeda and say, look at us. Look at this.
Feeling, aren't we something?
Exactly. Our guest, Dr. Frederick Bertley, has been the CEO of COSI since January of 2017. But this year, he launched a new TV show in partnership with WOSU in Columbus called QED with Dr. B. Take a listen.
Hi, I'm Dr. Frederick Bertley, President and CEO of Columbus, Ohio's Center of Science and Industry. And now I'm teaming up with WOSU Public Media for a brand new primetime TV science series called QED with Dr. B. From small innovations to big discoveries, in our new series, we'll show you that it's all quite easily demonstrated. Together, we'll reveal the science in the everyday. We'll take you into state-of-the-art labs performing cutting-edge research. And we'll talk to everyday scientists who are charting new frontiers and solving problems to make all of our lives better.
So tell us about this new show, QED with Dr. B. And for those of us who have forgotten our Latin, what does QED mean?
It's Latin for quad erat demonstratum, which roughly translates in English as quite easily demonstrated. And what those three letters are, going back centuries ago, when philosophers, physicists, or mathematicians would write out a proof, at the end of the proof, they would write those three letters, QED, telling the reader, hey, I've just explained, I broke down something that was complex, and there it is right in front of you. And so in speaking to the folks, our partners at WSU, the PBS affiliate, we were trying to have a cool show, and they were instructing me, because this is my first TV show, they were instructing me on, hey, think about the title, you don't necessarily want science, this and that. And so we had a design studio, all these ideas going up. And then finally I said QED, because this is something as a kid, I did mathematics in undergrad. It's something as a kid, I've always loved QED. When I write poetry, I put QED. It's my little kind of little thing that I do. And so I threw that out, and they loved it. They're like, it's short. It doesn't have science in it. It's not going to alienate people. It's got a real meaning that's symbolic for scientists and engineers. And they were like, but you know what? We want to put with Dr. B. I was like, whoa, hold up here. I'm not Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm not Bill Nye the Science Guy. I'm not famous. You're like, Bill Nye the Science Guy wasn't famous, but he still named the show Bill Nye the Science Guy. And now that's how he's known. So that's where that name came from. In terms of the show is really, and we're really proud of this. It's the first, to our knowledge, it's the first show that's a partnership between a science museum and a bona fide PBS affiliate, WOSU. And the reason why we think that's so important is there's a lot of great science shows out there. I mean, Nova crushes it, Nat Geo's got great stuff, but a lot of them have the host or hostess speaking to scientists or engineers, and many times they speak at a vocabulary that's really high and kind of makes the rest of us feel a little alienated. Well, COSI, as you know, is a place that makes science come alive and really makes science accessible for people of all ages, like we like to say, from the womb to the tomb. And so combining with a great production team like WOSU and us who have the sensibility of how to make things accessible, not dumb it down to make you feel like a three-year-old, but just make it accessible, we really relish this opportunity to hit the science illiteracy that's impacting our nation head on, but not alienate people, come out with cool content, cutting-edge content, but make it accessible.
That sounds great. I love that idea. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe one of the favorite topics that you've covered on the show?
You know, that's so, so tricky, Anna. You know, the way I've been cheating that answer is my favorite topic is the next episode.
Oh, I like it.
But that's cheating. I mean, it's such good stuff. The first episode is kind of antibodies, antibiotic resistance, and superbugs. The second episode is the science of race. I mean, what an important topic that's hitting our nation. And so we come at it at a way that doesn't make you feel bad. There's no pain points. It really breaks down this concept and this construct called race. The third one's about viruses. You know, how can that not be cool, unfortunately, with the pandemic going on?
Right.
Tonight is the fourth episode. It's on climate change. One of two episodes, and next one is as well. So, you know, we do that to nanotechnology, to artificial intelligence, to stress, to neuroscience of addiction. There's all these cool topics that we're trying to cover. But again, in a way that gets you enough science to feel hooked and engaged and not feel like you're 3 years old, but keep you hooked.
Well, and these topics, I mean, are just, the most timely things you could come up with. I mean, how do you get the ideas for the shows? And since you're excited about what's coming up?
Yeah, I mean, so look, you know the deal, right? Most of us are just not into science. Whether you got weeded out in middle school or because of math or in high school, chemistry or physics teacher wasn't great or whatever. You know, a lot of us just aren't into science. And so we were like, science is everywhere. And science is all around us. I mean, we can't wake up in the morning and get throughout the day without specifically being impacted by science. As soon as we pull out the phone to see what our great president texted or tweeted, that's science that makes that possible. As soon as we go to the breakfast table and you're eating your breakfast, regardless of what you're eating, there's genetically modified organisms there. Now, I'm not judging it, but they're in there. And I'm not just talking about, you know, plants, but your Fruit Loops or your pasta sauce. You know, when we drive to work, we use GPS. The medicines that heal our loved ones, you know, that's science and tech that makes all that possible. So it's all around us, yet people feel, you know, it's not for me. But if you couldn't read, you know, Anna or Dean, or you couldn't write the English language, you'd be embarrassed. It'd be a little shame to you, maybe a little shame your family and friends feel around you. Similarly, if you couldn't calculate your change when you went and bought something at the store, you might feel a little awkward. But for some reason in this great nation, it's okay to be like, yeah, no, I know nothing about science. I wasn't one of those nerds, or that's not for me. And so, you know, so to your point about what other topics, we try to use topics that are relevant, right? And let's not talk about that old blacktop desk you had in chemistry class in grade 10 or a Bunsen burner. Who the heck is using a Bunsen burner, right? Like, let's talk about molecular cloning. Let's talk about, you know, CRISPR-Cas9. Let's talk about artificial intelligence, climate change. And so we pick all these topics that, to your point, are very timely, and then we bring in some really smart women and men to help us get through it.
That's awesome. I'm excited. Like, I gotta go check it out. That's great. Shifting gears a little bit, we got to hear a little bit from you about this beforehand, but for our listeners, can you just talk a little bit about your background and what brought you to Columbus and to COSI?
Yeah, so interesting. I'm Canadian. And as all good, you know, African-American, African-Canadian kids, I grew up being the next Drake. I was going to be Lil Wayne because I was going to rap. or I was going to be mean on the basketball court with, like, Iverson with a killer crossover. Well, none of that happened. I didn't have a LeBron James game, and I certainly can't rhyme like Jay-Z. But true story, I had this video game. I had a paper route. My parents let me buy this video game. It's just, and I'm dating myself, but if you guys know this, you're dating yourselves as well. Coleco head-to-head football.
Oh my gosh. We had a Coleco Vision when I was growing up, which I
think. There you go. That's right. Coleco Vision. And so took these square batteries, these 9-volt batteries. And, you know, these games weren't energy efficient back then. So it chewed through these batteries. I was a little kid of paper. I couldn't afford to keep buying them. And so I did what I thought was a smart idea is I took out the battery. I went downstairs, found an old lamp, cut off the cable of the lamp, attached it to the black and red wire at the back of the game, plugged it into the wall. Best 10 seconds of my life. I remember playing that game. I was like, I solved all my battery problems. I was so excited. I was going to play before school, after school. By the 11th second, poof, charged. My game blew up. The outlet charged. This is 100% true story. The outlet charged. My dad, my parents are from the Caribbean. My dad's from Trinidad. My mom's from Barbados. My dad had been in Canada for like 40 years. He didn't have a West Indian accent unless he was upset. Because running down the stairs like, son, what are you doing? You're trying to burn down the house. And I was like, no. But all jokes aside, my parents were really supportive. But for that, for me, Anna, that was my aha moment where I realized this thing called electricity that we take for granted, flick on a switch or plug it out. There's something really cool and more complicated that's happening behind that wall. And that got me hooked on science. And so from there, kind of love science. end up going undergrad in mathematics and physiology, did my PhD in immunology, which never really relevant until a pandemic hits. So did a lot of work in HIV vaccine development, et cetera, years ago, but then transferred over to the science museum space because, again, the kind of growing science literacy, and I love basic science research and I love being a scientist, but it can be lonely. You're in a lab with just a few other people. Whereas if you work in a science museum, you guys know this, you've gone to COSI or the Great Lakes Science Center in Cleveland or Cincinnati Museum. I mean, phenomenal spaces. You're impacting many more people. And so that was my transition. And just now, because of the pandemic, I'm really reverting back to all that kind of skill set I have in vaccine development, specifically for what are called retroviruses, which is what coronavirus is. So it's amazing how your life kind of comes full circle. Who knew?
Wow. I mean, that story of rewiring, see, in my household, my dad would do the rewiring. So if I had the idea, he would like wire it up and then let him burn the house down. That's usually how it would have. He's like, oh yeah, we can totally plug this in. This is going to work. Maybe a lot of this came from COSI because I went to COSI as a kid and I grew up in Columbus and was there, oh man, too many times. And so what's new and exciting going on at COSI right now?
So, you know, Dean, thanks for asking that question. So for all disclosure, we are currently still closed. And like many places, we shut down. We've been closed, believe it or not, we closed in March. So we're coming up to like a year. We were ready to open in July and then again in November, but the count started climbing. So we're a science museum. So we made the science decision to say, you know what, not, let's be safe for the public. Having said that, what I'm so proud about the team, Dean and Anna, is our physical doors are closed, but our community doors are wide open. We closed our doors March 13th and we instantly pivoted and created all these resources. Something called COSI Connects, which you can go to cosiconnects.org. It's a kind of an umbrella gateway to all these science learning stuff for free. So you can't physically come to see our exhibits, but you can do virtual 3D tours through about 7 of our exhibits, including our great dinosaur gallery. And there's all these QR codes and augmented buttons that you can click on with your mouse and get access to a lot more information. So we've done that. But then the other cool thing we've done is, again, kudos to the team, is we're a hands-on. You talked about going to COSI. You know, it's a hands-on institution. You want to touch something, pull something. And we were like, well, how can we do that if our doors are physically closed? So we came up with these kits, and we call them the learning lunch boxes. And these kits, we have a nature kit, a water kit, a space kit, a human body kit, and a dinosaur kit. Each kit comes with 5 experiments from pre-K to grade 8, and you can do this experiment a day, a month, what have you, and it's great for teachers because it's all curriculum correlated. So the Ohio Science Learning Standards, all our kits speak to that, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've been able to have a really robust COSI experience, even though our doors are physically closed. And there's a bunch more stuff, but I won't bore you with details. Just go to COSI.org, lots of fun stuff. Like we like to say, for everybody, from the womb to the tomb.
See, I got totally enamored. I'm like, oh, we can just keep talking.
Just wait till I send you guys the adult kits.
What? There's adult kits?
So alcohol, and we talked about the science of that cocktail.
Hey, now that sounds like that a good idea.
I love it.
Yeah, because we started something called late night date night at the observatory for adults only after hours, which would be very successful. But take home alcohol testing kits. That sounds... write that
and under the guise of a science experiment, even better. It's like, this is research, guys. I have to see how much gin to the tonic I need to create. I don't know.
Exactly. It's definitely science.
I love it.
And Dr. B said it's okay.
Dr. B gave me a thumbs up on this, so it's fine. He's a PhD and fine.
Well, Dr. B, Frederick, thanks so much for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun.
Dean, it's been an absolute pleasure. Anna, thanks so much for having me on. Anytime I can come back and share some fun COSI stories, and better still, when you guys can come to Columbus, please look me up. We'd love to host you. A lot of fun stuff happening.
Oh my God,
absolutely. So to learn more about QED with Dr. B, check out the links in the show notes and online at wvxu.org/lookingup.
All right, so we like to answer questions, debunk things, etc. with this show. So we're going to ask a question that we get asked a lot at the observatory. And that is, how far can you see with a telescope?
Yeah, this is a very, very common question we get. When people come to the observatory, they see the telescope, they're like, okay, how far can you see with that? And it's a tricky question because, you know, galaxies are definitely the farthest thing away from us that we can see. And which galaxy can we technically pick out as the farthest? There's some debate about that. Some of our members would debate with me which is the farthest one they've seen before. But if we go kind of in stages, we could say, you know, looking at the moon, for instance, we see the moon in the telescope, we could see that great detail. We could see craters, we could see, you know, mountain ranges and valleys, and that's 240,000 miles away on average. Mm-hmm. If we look at planets, we can see all the planets in the solar system all the way out to Neptune. I'm not going to say any other one after that, but Neptune, which would be about a little less than 3 billion miles away. So the planets are a big step up from the moon.
Yeah.
Then we go out to the stars, and there's some of the stars at night that are some of the farthest, or some of the belt stars in Orion are some of the farthest at over 1,000 light years away. There's a star in the Big Dog constellation that's maybe more than 2,000 light years away, and then a star in constellation Cygnus the Swan called Deneb, which may be the farthest star in our galaxy that we can see, and that's 3,200 light years away. So the light there is it left that star 3,200 years ago and is only now getting to us. So that's pretty far. But like I said with the Andromeda galaxy, we're talking a whole different thing. All those things I've said before are in our galaxy, but once we step out and look at our galaxies out there, I would say the farthest galaxy I've seen through our scope is one called M51, also known as a Whirlpool galaxy. Ooh. These are two galaxies that are running into each other, a really giant spiral one that's swallowing up a smaller spherical one. And so it looks like a whirlpool is something that's being sucked into the other one. And it is a pretty cool sight to see in a giant telescope. And that one has been estimated being 23 million light years away. So that's the farthest thing I've ever seen through the observatory scope. But there's definitely galaxies that are much, much farther away. And some that the Hubble telescope has picked up have been on the order of 13 billion light years away.
Did I ever tell you about the time that somebody came in and tried to convince me that our Clark scope was the Hubble telescope?
No, I don't remember that one.
He was wearing overalls.
So they thought,
just incidentally,
the Clark scope was the Hubble telescope. He said, telescope.
No, is this the Hubble telescope? And I was like, no. He's like, are you sure? I was like, what? Well, I think in my first few months there too. I was like, what even is this?
That's an easy fact or fiction. Nope. We really should use it. The Hubble telescope. You know how I know this isn't the Hubble telescope? Because the Hubble telescope's in space.
That's right. You know how I know? Because it's not. That's how I know.
That's right.
When you said the Hubble telescope, didn't even think about that.
I know. Anyway. Yeah. You get all sorts of questions about that. And
We really do get some weird ones.
Do you remember the person that didn't like the smaller telescope that they called the crappy telescope?
Like, that person.
The smaller one is just as good as the bigger one. So I took offense at that.
It's right. Historical gem.
Yeah. Yeah.
People. Crazy.
Oh man. Well,
way to debunk this though. Way to talk about how far we can see in our scopes.
So there was one guy I will point out is that there was one of not exactly my heroes, but a guy that I looked up to in astronomy named John Dobson. He was the fellow that would take telescopes to public places and set up telescopes on street corners in San Francisco and all around and let people see stuff. He always had the answer. If somebody asked him how far away was something, he would always answer, way the heck out there.
Are you serious?
That's how he'd answered everything.
Was that his keep looking up?
That was his keep looking up.
Way the heck out there.
How far is that star? Way the heck out there.
Oh, my God.
Because... And I actually asked him about that. And he said, well, you know, I could tell them how many miles it was. They don't care. It's way the heck out there. That's all that matters. So that's going to be my new
details,
answer.
Details, schmeetails.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Special thanks to Dr. Frederick Bertley of COSI for joining us. You'll find a link to his show, QED with Dr. B, in the show notes or at our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find us there. That happens to be Apple Podcasts. Your rating and comments will help others find us. So thanks for helping us out. And if you like what you hear, spread the word.
We'd love to hear your ideas for guests or topics. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org. Our theme song and additional music is by Why. That's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. We're produced, recorded, and edited by Josh Elstro. Jim Nolan provides additional technical web assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.